I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This week's episode of the Bass Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Ashdown Engineering, a British bass amplification powerhouse whose gear is seen on the biggest stages in the world, backing up the biggest bands in the world. But now Ashdown have expanded their expertise into bass guitars. Having teamed up with master luthier Dan Lackin, previously of Lackland Basses, Ashdown are now offering five different models of US-designed basses, from classically inspired shapes to completely new designs, fusing vintage sensibilities with all the modern applications a bassist needs. Available in an ever-expanding range of finishes, and all for under £1,000. These instruments are extremely exciting. Check them out at ashdownmusic.com or follow links in the description of this podcast. Hello and welcome to the Bass Guitar Nerds podcast, a podcast by guitar nerds. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Hello.
And JD Short.
Hiya.
Yes, indeed. We're back for another bi-weekly episode. Last week, we tried to answer questions from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. But I think we were relatively unsuccessful. In fact, did we answer one or none?
I'm sure we did at least one.
Yeah, I think it was only one. So we are going to endeavour, because there are some great questions, we're going to endeavour to actually get through these with some pace today and answer all your burning questions, because we had some great ones, and it's nice to see a lot of the guitar players on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group getting involved in this podcast as well, so we'll try and help them out as well. First of all, let's talk about some stuff that we've been up to this week. Naomi, you've been messing around with a new fuzz.
I have indeed. So I got to try the Walrus Audio Contraband in my spare time the last week or so, and I'm a huge fan. Hadn't heard it before. Hadn't tried one before picking this one up. It's as simple as they come. We've got one knob and we've got one switch. And our button, and that's it. Literally an output switch, you know, so it's a super, super metallic. Maybe JD, you can tell me which diode that refers to when it's very metallic, very harsh sounding.
I want to say silicon, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I was leaning towards silicon as well. Anyway, I may or may not.
The one controls just volume then?
Literally just volume. Yeah, just output. Is how it's labeled.
Right.
So that's it. So it's I mean, definitely
predetermined amount of fuzz.
Exactly, yeah. So I have a habit, I wouldn't say it's a good habit, of going in super high with gain anytime I try any new pedal, only because I'm such a fan of driving gain and fuzz and all sorts of dirt in my tone. So this was perfect for me. Basically, didn't have to tweak anything because I can't. So really the only tonal option you have then beyond your bass, beyond anything you have ahead of it in the chain, is your thick and thin switch. So the thin will cut some of your low end and boost your high end, and the thick will cut some of your high end and boost the low mids and bass frequencies. One thing I was super stoked about with it was its retention of frequencies for bass. I think right. a lot of us
the problem with fuzzes.
Exactly, yeah, and I think most bassists who are fuzz fans in any sense will have tried or bought or come by pedals where, you know, you hear it on guitar and you get so excited for how it's going to sound with your bass going through it, and then your heart gets broken by that loss of low end. So pretty impressed with the Contraband for low end retention for sure.
Yes, it's I love a dead simple fuzz. It reminds me like things like who makes it? Is it Death by Audio? Their Doom fuzz. That might not be the right company. I'll have to Google.
You were doing a great job stalling while Googling.
Yes, I am doing that. No, I don't think it was. They did a. They
it
did
wasn't
a
Mr.
Fuzz.
Black, was it?
It was Mr. Black. That was yeah. it. Mr. Black to the Doom fuzz. Yeah, with the most oversized single control.
Doom stick. Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very good. I'm a sucker for a minimally controlled fuzz. JD, last week we spoke about the is it Clog?
Yeah, I think it's Clog. Yeah,
Clog Audio. Who did their prickle
fuzz?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And it had, what were the two settings? It was like prickle and
prickle and fuzz.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So it's basically with fuzz, it's basically that same sort of thing where there's no controls on top, so you switch on the fuzz, and then the prickle is a higher gain. Right. Setting on top of it that for me just really it almost acts like a treble boost kind of thing, so it really yeah. like gets sort of shreddy and glitchy in the way that, you know, it sounds like, you know, when you start feeding multiple fuzzes or distortions into each other, those that sort of like clashing of waveforms that happens, it's really nice to like kick on something extra gnarly, you know, as a opposed to having, but it was, yeah, I really like that one. It's such a big, warm, raucous, like, fuzz. Like,
yeah, yeah, nice. Absolutely. Yeah, love minimal controls on pedals is very cool. It, like, a different type of effect, but Anna Sounds did a compressor called the Lazy Comp, and it just has one control, which I think is just the blend. So everything is predetermined. The ratio, the threshold are all predetermined, and then you're just blending your dry signal with what they think is an optimum amount of compression. You can actually up the back and do it with tiny little rotaries in the back of the pedal. But I thought that was a great idea for just keeping things simple and sensible. And I think compression, above all other effects, is kind of almost the hardest to understand. You know, it's easy to you know what a drive pedal is going to do, you know when it says drive and when it says tone, like, you know what those controls are easy to work out. But, you know, when you've got a compressor, not everyone understands what threshold is or what ratio is, and you know, it's nice to have that simplified.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, compression's definitely more that bit more of a fine art, isn't it, than than the simplicity of a lot of the more fun effects that we're used to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. At the opposite end of the spectrum, a pedal that has a lot of controls on it for the type of effect it is. JD, you've been messing around with something from Solid Gold.
Yeah, it's the Solid Gold Effects. It's their Apollo 2 phaser. It's been really into it. So it has, wait for it, it's got a speed control. It has different waveform controls. It's got what they call regen, which is just the feedback sort of there. It's got, well, two toggle switches, talk about in a second, and it's got the depth. So your normally you get like speed, depth, and then your regen or feedback kind of controls. That's normal phaser territory. The waveform control is really cool because you can sort of, you know, change from just a typical sine wave to you know, sawtooth or ramps or any of those. The mode and like there's a 1-2-4 toggle switch, which I'm guessing was what it's called. Basically, like that, the mode's really cool because it accentuates different parts of the pattern right. from the waveform. So you can get these weird subdivisions going. So you can almost get like dotted eighths or anything like working. It's sort of similar to you get with like the, you know, the RE20 from Boss, like the Space Echo, you know, where you start getting like that kind of feel for the delay. You can get that with a phaser, which is not necessarily something you're kind of like necessarily used to. And it took me a bit to really get my head around it, because there's some stuff, like one of the things I don't like about phasers is when you can hear, certainly in modern phasers where you can hear like more of a square wave, you can hear like a bit of like a click when the signal will clip a bit,
right?
But with this, like really being able to like dial the depth back, you could get like on the bass, it would just be like these subtle pulses and sort of really spacey phases, but also really controlled in a way. The other thing about this is it has an expression pedal, which is great.
Because it's just an expression out. So.
Yeah. Well, in. So it has. Yeah. So you can. It's mostly. So I think there's not numbered. I think there's 10 to 12 different wave settings on here. And so for the first like 10 or so, it's the expression takes over the speed. So you can do sweeps with the speed on that, which is really exciting. Then like in the final position for the wave, that expression just controls where it's like a manual position for where the phaser like frequency sits. So like you can, it's almost like using it like a wah pedal. So you can sort of just like sort of sweep like where the peak of the phase gets going. So you can, you know, imagine that with loads of reverb or loads of delay or loads of other things that you're working with, you can just, you know, sort of like blend through it. And it's really great. Like I just gotten back into phasers recently, like in this last year, because there's something I always like, always have chorus pedal, and then it's like, oh, maybe I want something different, I'll go with like a phaser or flanger, and it's like I always go back to chorus because that's what I like. But it's I've been using phasers a lot in the last year or so, and mostly because I picked up one of the Mutron, like the phaser they came out with, the new ones. They're the, in essence, rebuilds of the old 70s ones, and yeah. And I've been really liking that, but there's something about like this Apollo it's a phaser, but it's completely different. You know, like it's, and the other thing is it's just really, really elegant sounding, in the best way possible. Like it just sounds nice, you know, which is really what I like with a lot of, cause I either want like that kind of dirty analog vibe of like a 70s, you know, like not quite sure what it's actually going to do phaser.
Or I
want like an amazing amount of control of being able to shape everything exactly how I want. But like the expression pedal and like the toggle switches to like accentuate different patterns like in the wave is like really especially worth checking out.
They are really good solid gold. I think they consistently make really interesting pedals that seem to be very thought through and very much like they're not just adding a type of effect to their product line. They're trying to do something different with it, which is very cool. Is the Mutron your favorite phaser, do you reckon? What, you know, is that your standard go-to?
It would be the one I'd recommend. Probably, and to be fair, I haven't played loads, but like, you know, there's like Phase 90 and like some of the classic like MXR ones and, you know, and also like Boss phasers and stuff. But it's probably what I'd go for, but like mostly almost everything that Mutron does, they make my go-to version of that thing.
Right.
So I wanted to be like, probably, yeah, but it's, you know, like there's a lot I just haven't, I wasn't really exploring phasers that much, just because there's something about them that like I just always prefer the sort of sound of a wah, or like I think it's the thing is like phasers for bass for sure, like phasers can get real muddy in the low end real quick, or you sort of, I still want a lot of the fundamental note, that I'm playing, you know, and like with phasers, like that gets kind of out. And especially with like the base courses or courses that'll have the, you know, sort of built-in crossovers, like those are great because I like to, you know, put it so it's like basically like open A and above has like a course signal applied to it, and you know, or just, you know, like some sort of thing. But yeah, I really, yeah, like that, phaser and distortion has also been a huge fave. So.
Yeah, I find coupling distortions with modulation always sounds cheesy to me. So I always tend to avoid it. As much as I love modulation, I do find that they tend to be, what I use modulation for is like, this is almost the middle eight pedal. Going to be the slower bit where everything gets a little soupier, and I want something a bit more than the clean tone. And the problem is, you don't really need more than one of those, and I use a lot of vibrato. So it almost, I used to use a Phase 90 all the time, and I absolutely loved it. And I used to just leave it on. I think, you know, again, as unsurprisingly, I was watching a rig rundown with Omar Rodriguez Lopez from the Mars Volta, and he said that he never turns his phaser off. And so I was like, right, I'm never going to turn my phaser off. But that was a brief period of time where I just had a Phase 90 on as my standard sound. But yeah, I kind of agree. I think phases are, I love a slow phase, but they can be tricky. And I think something like a chorus, of course, you know, a vibrato is doing a really similar thing to a chorus anyway, tends to be a bit more multi-applicable, you know, than a phaser. What about you, Naomi? Do you especially use phasers?
Do I phase? Not especially. It's not something I would. It wouldn't be a go-to for me, let's say. And also the point I thought of as you were saying, kind of, you know, about it being like a middle eight sort of combination to use distortion and modulation. I find it like it's a habit for me to kind of knock in a distortion or a fuzz or a driver or a fuzz and a modulation. So whether that's a flange or a phase or a delay. But I find it can be a really good way to just eat up the frequency content. So when I'm writing, it can be very easy to get into a habit of, because I'm a bassist writing, I can then end up accidentally eating into, you know, places where there should be a synth living frequency wise, or a guitar or a vocal. So I don't know, I feel like currently I'm trying to stick to just sort of dynamic effects, but I do love the sound of phase. One of my most used and technically worst pedals that I own is a Line 6 Liqua flange. I don't know if you remember those.
Wow.
Of the, what were they called, Tone Core? You know, the pedals I'm talking about, same family as the Verbzilla. Yeah, so they're
they were incredibly robust chassis on these. They were like tanks.
It's one of the heaviest musical equipment items that I own. And it's a pedal. I mean, yeah, anyway, it's saying a lot. So, yeah, obviously related to phase, I'd say it would kind of be my go-to like more artistic tremolo alternative, let's say.
Wow. It's you get loads of options, don't you? I'm just looking at what the... Oh, right, so you've got a saw up, saw down, envelope up, sine, step, random... And then it has a vintage mode. I wonder what that is.
It was just like a softer, less kind of digital sounding. In fact, it was way more phaser sounding, the vintage setting.
I see. Oh, and a little toggle switch for digital, analog, or liquid.
I can confirm all of those sounded horrible. In fact, I might record like a demo or something of it soon, just as an example of the gross sounds I was able to make with it.
Looks like you can pick them up for about £20.
Yeah, you can. A hell of a lot cheaper than a Verbzilla.
Yeah. Wow, that is an interesting pedal. Now we said that this week we're gonna try and get through some questions that have been provided from the Facebook group. So we're gonna dig into those, but we need to come up with a way, essentially, to make sure that we don't do the thing that, you know, guitar nerds is want to do, and I think we did last week as well, which is to sort of end up going down a rabbit hole and only answering one question, and it's sort of just, you know, going off onto other things. So we're going to introduce a way of doing that, which so yeah. JD's got an effects pedal.
Yeah, well, so let's set a timer, and then
okay.
Also, because I don't know if we have to license music for Apple ringtones, let's not use that. Let's use our pedal. So I will be using a Redbeard Effects Honey Badger Octave Fuzz for my start stop.
Excellent, excellent. Nice. I will assist with the dry bell, the engine, which is their foundation. Preamp. It's a guitar pedal rather than the bass pedal, but it happens to be the one sitting next to me. Well, actually, the only one sitting next to me that's currently released, because, you know, it's nearly gear of the year time, dear listener, and so I have lots of yet to be released goodies sitting next to me that we can't talk about.
Oh,
yet.
Like that new Boss Wazacraft?
Yeah. Actually, you know, I don't even have that. They're obviously that Boss are putting something out soon. They're teasing it at the moment, and Matt Knight wouldn't even let me have one ahead of time because he doesn't trust me.
He has known you for a while, to be fair.
Yes, that's very much the case. So he knows it won't be deliberate. I'll just I'll forget and do something. You know,
yeah, you're like Tom Hiddleston, or the bloke who plays Spider-Man and all the Avengers films. I saw a clip of this. Apparently, he like just like all the time gives spoilers for all the films, and he's just like, I was reading the script and I thought it was fake, and I realized it was really in there. And they're like, this is a live interview. You just told everyone, you know, like, so there's like, apparently that's like a thing that I was today years old when I learned.
Wow, there you go. It's Tom Holland, isn't it? Tom Hiddleston.
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh no, Tom Hiddleston is.
No wait.
He's Loki, isn't he?
Yeah. I don't know what the Spider-Man one.
The other one. Right.
Yeah.
I see. Right. Okay. So we're just gonna start at the top. We're gonna start at the top with these questions. The first question is coming from Peter Pest. Pest. How do you say that?
Pesci.
Peter Pesci. Here we are. Peter Pesci. Thank you for this question. Peter Pesci says, hey, bass nerds, now that I'm a bass player, coming up on 1 week now.
Congrats.
He's curious, what would be the essential bass pedal that a guitar player would be unlikely to own already? Discuss. Now, I think, JD, you might have weighed in the comments section of this one.
Yeah, probably did. I don't remember what I said, though, so we'll see if it's the same one. Yeah. I mean, I think it's difficult to say. I think the things that kind of always sort of stand out are compressor, chorus, octave, which are sort of like the ones. And I think that there may be different versions of those for bass than there would be for guitar that you would likely use. Uh-huh. And then... I think a good some sort of dirt pedal that works well with bass, depending on sort of like what you're into. If it's just a tiny bit of breakup, like you're looking at more of a Tube Screamer kind of feel, or something that is a Big Muff kind of feel.
Mm-hmm. That does seem like the obvious one, doesn't it? Like a dirt pedal, in that I think with a lot of compression. Sorry, with a lot of modulation, I think guitarists are going to own that. Potentially, they'll own a compressor as well, but I think compression is up there. But the one thing that, you know, your drive pedal for guitar almost definitely won't sound good on a bass. You know, if it's, you know, it could possibly, but, you know, it's unlikely to. Would you not think something like the Sans amp would be there?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably... I mean, that would be a really good, I mean, that would be an excellent shout, because it's, you would get, you can use it as a dirt pedal, but then it is the pedal that will is the bass tone that you've heard everywhere for decades, you know, kind of thing that you probably don't have. I mean, the other thing is too, is like, this is too much, like some sort of envelope filter or something that you probably don't have as a guitar player. You know, like, I don't know a lot of guitarists with, you know, like that would have like a Qtron or something like that. But, you know, for bass it, and I know this is our great debate broadly, around just like envelope anyway, but it's like, to me, that sort of feels like something that feels like it's more at home on a bass than it does a guitar.
Yeah. I think I agree.
Yeah. In terms of getting the most in terms of versatility from your instrument, I think that can really open up a bass in a way that the guitar has sort of already spoken for itself.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think then, Naomi? What would you get?
Honestly, the first that came to mind for me was an OC2 alike, only because it's the quint, like, you know, sort of arguably the essential bass pedal for anything octave related. If you want that super clean tracking, if you want something that's tried and tested over the years. Definitely a decent bass drive would be sort of tied for the first port of call I would have. And first pedal that would come to mind for a really decent bass drive would actually be the Electro-Harmonix Bass Soul Food. I'm not sure what your guys' opinions are on those, but they were like, they were a bit of a go-to in a store I worked in for a long time, and you know, they were kind of the direction that people would be pointed towards when looking for their first, because if you know it suits, if you're on a budget, sounds great.
Yeah, they were like 60 quid, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So like it's a lot of bang for your buck if you don't want to straight away go down the necessarily the Sansamp route.
Well, that I guess is the issue. Sansamps have really held their value, and they're still like a couple of hundred quid.
And I mean, they're worth it, 100% worth it. But I would forgive someone new to the world of bass if they didn't want to splash the cash straight away, especially if they already have versions of for guitar. You know what I mean? So yeah, additional to that, absolutely 100% get yourself a good compressor pedal. Absolute essential part of any bassist's sonic arsenal, as it were.
And again, something you can do very affordably.
Yes.
For compression. Any recommendations for affordable compressors?
I brought this up before, but I'm a huge fan of the EBS Multicomp.
Is that affordable?
It
that went really high then.
Is it, or am I thinking of another one? Hang on a sec. EBS Multicomp. It's not going to break the bank. You're around the kind of 160, 170 pounds mark.
The MXR Dynacomp, whilst not being bass specific as such, I think is a very good vintage sounding compressor.
Show.
And again, like you can hit under £100 for those if you get the new one, because it's now a mini, isn't it? The Dynacomp. I don't know if they still do the standard size. I assume they do. Look at that. You can pick up the old one for £40, you know, on the pre-owned market, which is very good. I mean, it's dead simple, but you know, that's great.
Yeah, I mean I think that's a good shot. I think the more I'm thinking about it is like it feels like compressor. The thing with compressors, like we talked about this before, it's like it's not a very sexy effect to get. Like it's not one of those things that you get and you're like, oh yes, you know. But it is a thing that certainly, you know, if you're starting out on bass and I mean the trick with bass is getting the notes even in a way that is harder to do than on guitar, right? So it's just because of the physics involved of the strings, and so it's like. So the compressor, I think, will make things better and sound better. And also, it keeps your amp from working as hard. It, you know, like, there's lots of good things for it that are, again, not very fun to be like, ooh, check out all those, like, you know, check out all my delay tails, bro. You know, like, it's, you know, like, but you get, it's the value they bring, and it's sort of like an elegant thing to have. But yeah, like I mean, I think that MXR is a good shout. Really, yeah, I mean, any MXR for sure. Stuff like is just like always solid, always good, always affordable. Like I feel very much the same as I do with like Electro Harmonix and stuff, where it's like it whatever you get's not going to hurt, you know? Like
yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong with a bass comp, really, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I was looking at some other options. I think things like the Pigtronics Philosopher bass compressor, yeah, that their micro cool pedal that they do. I think you can pick those up for around 50 to 70 quid secondhand, you know, as well.
Oh, wow.
So that's not a bad option for something with a bit more control. But yeah, there are tons of compressors out there, and you're kind of right. Whether you're going for old school or whether you're going for modern multiband, although I don't think there'll be many multibands available at the affordable level, it's just one of those things that you can't really go wrong, and it really is going to smooth and sort out, you know, your overall sound. It might not be immediately noticeable, but it's definitely worthwhile.
Okay,
that's
enough time.
Awesome.
So that was like 8 minutes. That's not too bad. Let's go. Let's go. Next one.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Eric Vaughan says, he's asked this question before, but wondering if there's any update as to the suggestions. Desktop practice amps for bass, or at least bass suitable. Are the Katana Air or Positive Grid Spark any use on bass, and could either handle a low B Blackstar Fly? What's the Guitar Nerd's approved bass-friendly desktop amp of choice? JD, I think you weighed in on this one as well.
Yeah, I did. So I remember when this came up, and then because also I'm in a small space and was thinking about this quite a bit. And I think what they actually ended up going with is what I would also recommend too is the Phil Jones Micro, I think. So Phil Jones bass, well known for just shockingly great engineering.
Yeah, making cabs that are like 16 4-inch speakers.
Yeah.
12 and, by 5. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things I adore because they use very small speakers, but what that gives you is a lot of surface area. Surface area is what gives us volume. And like and so with that, it's like each of the speakers is working, like it's working less and is working more efficient. So it takes a lot of air to move an 18-inch, you know, cabinet, like those old PVs and the old SWRs we've spoken about recently. Like that takes a lot of power, and they're, you know, like the cone has to travel further. Whereas like the small ones, they're really good. I've, you know, I mostly played their, like the Briefcase and some of those. Like I've had those. I use a Phil Jones Big Head as my headphone amp. They're excellent. I think some other things we talked about was like Eden makes a little micro tour that's basically a stocking stuffer kind of amp, but it sounds shockingly good. And it's what I used to use for Skype lessons all the time, because it's loud enough to play it like at your desk. Like it's not giggable, and it's not like something I would really like mic up and record. But when I just wanted to have sound coming out, not play with like headphones or something, like it was really good. And then I don't have experience with the Katanas, but you know, like other people weighing in, and kind of what I heard was that, you know, like it sounds like they would be perfect, you know, perfectly suitable for that. So yeah, but I think those are all good shouts that were in that thread there.
Yeah, I don't know if the Positive Grid Spark I assume it has options on there. My problem with things like that is every time someone brings out like an amplifier that's loaded with amp modeling and effects and stuff like that, they might throw a bass thing on there, but essentially it just feels a bit like you're spending all that money for them to give you this tiny corner of the amp's specification. It's like they've thrown this in. This is not actually designed for that. And I kind of felt that, you know, a lot with the Positive Grid Spark. The Katana Air I can't remember if it has a bass setting, or if it's just one of those things where you would use the acoustic setting on there just to sort of open up the full range. But again, it's like, this is fine, this is okay, but I think I agree with you, JD. I think there are some more specific options out there that would be good.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
What do you think, Naomi?
Yeah, I mean, my initial input was just going to be the Blackstar Fly base. Again, super cheap and cheerful and is base specific. I think, as you mentioned, though, JD, you know, it's good to have... not that it's, you know, wildly priced, but I just think the standard of everything Phil Jones has done is, you know, it's kind of like hi-fi equivalent, isn't it, in terms of the audio quality you're getting. So, yeah, for sure. I would say if budget allows, 100%. You can look at the rest of the stuff the company has done. And in terms of the bigger kind of Phil Jones products, I think they're some of the nicest cabs I've ever heard. So to get that at desktop level is pretty, pretty good going. However, if you're looking for cheap and cheerful, if you're looking for something that will give you a super nice sound and you're living in a flat or an apartment or something and really want to keep it small and want to keep it handy and be able to pop it in a backpack with you, then something like the Fly Bass is super for that.
Yeah, absolutely. If he hadn't said desktop, if we were just talking about like small sort of living room amps,
yeah,
I would have suggested something like, do you remember when Ampeg did that like micro stack?
Yeah. So I was gonna say that, but for desktop, yeah, because it's a nice setup for sure.
I would say, like, when I did see this question, it did, that was one of the things that came to me that made me be like, oh yeah, I always wanted one of those. And then I started looking at them and I was like, yeah, like that. I mean, that honestly, that might not be a bad shot. Like, if it's, I guess it just depends too on like, is it desktop or is it just small? I mean, I know this question is specifically desktop, but if someone else is looking for just like a small amp, like that's, those were great because the cabs were 210s, I think. Mm-hmm. They're like 210 micro head. Mm-hmm. One looks cool.
Yeah.
I don't remember how loud they are.
They did two, didn't they? They did the CL and the VR. I remember the VR was 200 watts.
Yeah.
Which is their vintage reissue version. I don't know. I don't know if it was the same with the CL or if the CL was, you know, well, but 200 watts is, you know, not bad at all.
No, not at all. Also in for a shout, if, you know, if you're willing to go that little bit bigger, I suppose, than desktop is, and you guys will need to tell me the name of the head that goes with this, but I think only a year or two ago, TC brought out that 2x8 200 watt bass cab. With the matching really small head.
Oh, yeah.
The BC208 is the cab, and the head is, what is the head called?
The BC250 or BH250?
The BH or the BQs? It was
BH250.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, super cheap, kind of living room size. And has a headphone out, I'm pretty sure as well.
Yeah, those do. I've used those quite a bit at like different shows and stuff. Like they're good, solid heads. They also have the built-in, like they'll have like a built-in tuner and stuff, and I think a built-in tone print, like a switchable, like one tone print. So you could even get the Joe Branton tone print and put it on your
You can do that.
Yeah. So yeah. So I think, I mean, that those are all good shouts as far as like small, you know.
Yeah.
Small amps to have. Yeah, I think that.
Beside the desk as opposed to on top of the desk, perhaps.
Or under the desk.
Yeah. Well, under the desk. The Ampeg Micro CL is 100 watts, so it is less than the VR.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, even that, like, I think, you know, for, like, practicing in a room, you know, or just, like, running, you know, like, just playing and stuff like that, like, I think that'd be perfect and shockingly cool.
Yeah, incredibly cool. In fact, there's the VR has a limited edition red version at the moment that seems to be kicking around. You can get the set for £650.
And I'm pretty sure it's less than that in the States, which is why I was like, oof, that is not that is VAT and duty.
I thought, if I was going to get one of these, kind of half the appeal is it for it to look like an Ampeg VR. So I'm not sure I'd even want the red one. I'd want it to look like a mini version of the real thing.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. Yeah. Okay. Right. So the next question, we're going to Liam McGovern, who says multi effects for bass. What covers the most ground? And might be answering the question here, but Helix for bass, is that the best all-rounder? Now, Naomi, you are uniquely positioned to answer this.
I am in the case of one product, Joe, so I will answer this in the case of... So I had the HX Stomp very highly recommended to me, and I chose to plump for it. Recently, and yeah, I've been super pleased in terms of what I was looking for, which is being able to route both series and parallel, being able to route for dual outputs, going to two amps, being able to have stereo in if I need. I've been super impressed by the HX. Additional to that, obviously, is the versatility, which obviously is far more ubiquitous now than it was in years gone by. But being able to use a desktop editor and add as many patches made by anyone that I want as well, and can then print onto the unit. So, yeah, that's been the winner for me thus far. Though I'd be keen to try out what else is on the market now, like Boss's recent release. Joe, help me, what was the name?
The GT1000 Core, which is very much Boss's version of the of the Helix Stomp, or the HX Stomp. More processing power on the Boss one, so you can whereas the HX Stomp is a less powerful version of the Helix, and you know, and the Helix LT. The GT1000 Core is literally everything from the GT1000 in a small compact unit. The things that Line 6 have going for it over the GT1000, as always, as will always be the case with Boss, the interface is rubbish, and the desktop software for you to use with Boss isn't very good. The screen is very dated. Like it's with all Boss stuff, it's just everything they put out, it looks like and has the editing capabilities of something that should have come out a decade ago. Tonally, I having had both, well, still having a Helix LT and the GT1000 Core, I think the GT1000 Core is a better product. If you are looking for sensible tones, so I use the GT1000 Core on my desktop, and I just have it plumbed in, so I can just I've built a bass rig on there that has like a parallel second dirty amp that I can turn on and off, and then just a simple clean sound, and that's it. That's what I use it for. I use it for recording when I want those simple tones. If I wanted to make crazy noises, take advantage of incredible reverb, delay, and modulation options, then I think the Helix is a fantastic piece of kit with just some incredible sounding effects and, you know, and a usable interface. It's easy to manage. And the Line 6 community is great for being able to find different interesting tones as well.
Yeah, your setup sounds not dissimilar to mine. I mean, the focus for me, especially in the year of little to no gigs, has been taking advantage of the, you know, the amp and cab sims as well, because the world on offer there in terms of what people are creating as downloadable blocks is just incredible. So it's more than effects in that it can be your entire rig bar the instrument itself. I suppose as well the draw for me with the HX Stomp, as would be with the GT1000 Core, is that it can fit as part of a bigger board, whereas with the Helix or with the GT1000, it sort of is your board.
Yeah.
So the biggest question I would have is, how much are you going to be asking of the piece of kit at once? How many effects do you need to run simultaneously?
Yeah.
That is a huge clincher for me, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do think it's lovely with both the Core and the HX Stomp that you can include it with. You can work it into another board and have loads of other pedals. That is very appealing. The controllability falls down with both the Stomp and the Core, in that unless you're using its MIDI functionality to route it out into some sort of switching pedal, which essentially makes it as big as its larger counterpart anyway, then all you can do is scroll up and down through presets, which isn't incredibly usable. Obviously, you can use it in manual mode as well, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then you could take advantage of, I think, is it two effects on the Stomp? Because don't you always have to have one assigned to tap or something?
To
like
tap
that?
And tuner, exactly. Right. I think it's a max of two simultaneously you can have. So it's, you know, it's this awesome machine for, I suppose, as what would I say, like your calling card or your wild card or whatever on your board, where you need to have something far more versatile than your standard pedals, a little bit like the M5 was from Line 6, right? Versus the M9 or versus the M13, where you have this crazy huge versatility. The M5, you know, I would always say when someone was kind of looking at it in store, like, this is perfect if you need to have a wealth of tools but only need one tool at a time.
So that
would be my take on the Stomp for sure. I think you raised some good points about the bigger units as well.
Yeah. Before I move on to JD, what amps do you find you're using on the HX Stomp? What's been your go-to?
Orange and Ampeg completely, because those are, well, they're I suppose they're clones which are not named Orange and Ampeg, obviously.
There's an Orange bass amp? Is there?
Yeah, it's called a Mandarin.
Oh, right. No, that's the guitar amp though, isn't it? The Mandarin.
Oh well, I downloaded one from the editor. I'll find out the name. I'll come back with it.
Yeah,
but it was
that's cool. Yeah,
yeah.
The Mandarin 80, which I think is what they uploaded, which is a version of the AD80.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I found myself always using I was pretty much glued to their Ampeg B15.
Yeah,
I think that's the one I've been using too.
It's a little less hot than the others. I find with all the Ampeg, all the amps on the Helix, everything's quite hot, and the just finding something I could clean up that then worked as a good platform with effects. I thought the B15 was rather good.
Well, definitely the user interface is really decent for going in and tweaking straight away.
Absolutely.
Go on, JD, sorry.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, I was going to say, like, I think, I mean, to me, like B15 is one of my favorite amps of all time. And, like, I used to play one when I was at uni. Like, that was what we had in one of the rehearsal rooms. And I was just, like, so
that's not
hard.
Bad.
Yeah, it was, like, so hard to, like leave and be like, can I just take this with me? No one will notice this amp from the 60s going missing. I'm probably going to do them a favor by doing this. I think that's the thing. Was like a lot of the models, especially a lot of the models that aren't officially licensed models you see out there, are I feel like they're doing the impression of what people think a B-15 sounds like. So like Joe, what you're saying, like they always sound hot and they're always too, there's always more distortion on them than an actual B-15 had, you know, kind of thing. So
yeah.
But back to the question. I mean, if we're absolutely just talking about like the best multi effects, like that's small, that's out there, it's the Mod Devices Duo or the Dwarf that's about to come out.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, like they're incredible. Everything sounds great. The routing for like just the amount of processing power they have and what you can do is stunning and like flawless, you know, like in their execution of it. It's like the Duo is great. Like I have a Dwarf coming, I'll say, just sort of, you know, being able to have those, I think those are well worth checking out. I think, you know, like there's lots of videos and stuff out there, because the Dwarf was one that it, you know, was an Indiegogo Kickstarter that isn't actually out yet, but that one is meant to be like a smaller one that has foot switches on it. So it's very much in that same sort of like, here's a small multi-effect to have it. But for me, it's of that Helix quality.
Yeah.
Where it can be like the brain of your board, or like the main piece of it, or like a main piece of it, where like that Line 6 M5, like I know we've talked about this for years, but like that was such a core pedal to have. Mm-hmm. As a spare for any of your other pedals.
Exactly how it was on my board, yeah.
Yeah, and it's similar to like the Zoom, like those multi-stomp series where you could have,
yeah,
I think up to three effects or something happening on the one single pedal. Like I really, the single version of, I think those, like the MS-60B or whatever, like, which I think sounded good. Again, like it's great if you wanted to have one or two sort of things happening. And I dug that, cause that was like a cool, like jet phaser, like a Roland jet phaser. Like they did a fairly decent replication of that if I needed it for one or two separate things and stuff. And also like, one of my favorite pieces of kit from yesteryear is the Boss GT6B, in that, which was the red, sort of in that like classic Boss style of like, it had like five or six pedals, the built-in like expression pedal. Like that was my travel board for a long time that I would take to like rehearsals and stuff when I didn't want to bring like everything else, because it was like, it's easy enough to chuck in, you know, I think it almost fit in a backpack, or it fit mm-hmm. in one of my bags. And I was like, oh, it's like, I can have this for rehearsal. It gets me close to everything I want without like doing it. But those are more sort of getting a multi-effect to be able to like explore a bunch of other effects versus like, kind of like what we're talking about with like the Helix and like the Mod Duo and you know, that the Boss where it's like, what is, could be integral on,
yeah,
any level
pro,
of board,
isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, yeah, exactly. I've got one of the Mod Devices Duo. I've got one of those, and it's absolutely fantastic because it's completely open source software as well. So, and again, like Helix, you can download things that people have built. Just the most creative and incredible, sort of effects paths. It's just really wonderful, and the software was great, really easy to use, like a really organic, free way of creating a board where you're literally positioning stuff. It's not like all on a line like it is with sort of Line 6 or Boss. You can, mm-hmm. you're just trying to squeeze as much stuff onto the screen as you can.
Yeah.
It's very, very cool. Really good shout, actually, because they're also very similarly priced. And really good products. Anyway, we should.
Hang on. Wait.
There we go. Oh, wait. No.
My first one.
I did octave well first. Done. Hold on. I gotta go back to bypass. Okay, here we go.
Jake Gray asks, how much difference does a high mass bridge make? Worth the upgrade for a Mexican standard Jaguar bass? Naomi.
Full transparency here, I haven't upgraded a bridge yet.
Really?
What?
Yeah, I know. What? I know. Listen, honesty is the best policy, okay? I'm here, I'm embarrassed, I haven't upgraded a bridge.
Well,
there, I said it.
I have never done that either. The reason being, I've never seen a problem with the bridges that come on base. It's never been an obvious thing to me. I know that the whole thing is like, oh yeah, more contact area, sort of more tone. I was like, I don't know. John Paul Jones didn't seem to mind the one that he had.
Yeah, and I guess I've been in a similar position. Now, I will say fundamentally, I wholly support the theory behind it. In that you want to get the best possible sustain from your body wood. And especially since my reverend epiphany a few years ago when I got my Mercalli 5, bought a bass with a slightly more unusual sounding body than the alder and ash and bass wood that all my other basses are made of. I really did notice the hardware in it for the first time. Yeah, and that would definitely lead me to go back to all of the other bases I have and now consider upgrading the bridge. But yeah, it's not something I've done just yet.
I see. JD, you sound like you're champing at the bit.
I have upgraded nearly every bridge I've ever had on any base. And I do, like, I'm a big fan of the high mass bridges. I think any Fender style base I've had has had a badass bridge on it at some point. So the Leo Kwan Badass 2 or 3. I really like the heft and the feel of it. And I also think for me, it's a more comfortable bridge to play. Cause I do a lot of bridge level muting on my hand, but I think it's definitely worth the upgrade. I think it doesn't make as much difference as it is probably advertised as it does. It's tough to tell. Like, it's one of those things, like, sometimes with, like, even when you put new pickups in it, you know, like, there's, like, the difference between them is 15% maybe, you know? Like, it's still going to sound mostly like the same bass. But I think there can be a level of sustain that you will get, and there can be a level of, like, just resonance that's there. I think there's a big difference between getting like the sort of like mid-market or like when, let's just say, like a Fender or any other company like says they come out with a bass that has, they're like, this is our high mass bass. I think those, like, I could be wrong, but like my impression was, because I had those and would put on the Badass that I had, which was, to be fair, an older Badass, but that was a high mass bridge, and that it weighed a good pound or two more, you know, like it was like a solid chunk of metal. What I, and you mentioned this earlier too, is like it's really about like the string contact that is where you get a lot of the resonance. And with that, like what I started doing sort of before I moved away from like really metal bridges and stuff, because like my Stonefield doesn't have a metal bridge or anything, is having, so there's the counter argument to my high mass bridge, but is the Babbage, like the full contact.
Oh yeah, series they're of those. Really good.
Yeah, I really like those. You get a ton of resonance, and it definitely makes a difference. Like that was a bass that I definitely noticed a difference on, and they also, like, they're not 4 pounds worth of like extra weight on your bass. Like, it's not this big massive chunk, which, to be fair, depending on your bass, like, may or may not be a good thing. So if you want to counteract like neck dive, make the other part of your bass like heavier, you know. So there's, it's more of that. Like, I think it's definitely worth doing, but I don't know that it's one of those. I've always been pleased when I've done it, but I don't know that it's a thing that, you know, like I would, you know, look to, you know, yeah, like there's so many things you can change on a bass. Like, I think pickups would be a, you know, like if you don't have,
always going to be the first protocol, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, like if the difference is, do I spend, you know, $100 or $150 on a, like, US on a new bridge, or do I get, you know, and, or is it, do I spend $100 on pickups, or do I go to $250 on pickups, but then I think it's definitely worth putting a bridge in. Plus, like, a lot of them, like, it is just pretty cool to be able to, like, do that level of work like on a bass, right? Like that's one of the core pieces of it. So like it gives you like a, if you're doing the work yourself, it feels like, oh, like I'm this is part of it, you know, like it, there's like, I like that connection of like, this is the thing that I've been dealing with and tweaking and kind of getting personalized to me.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, it's, I don't, with it being a Mexican standard Jaguar bass, it's kind of like, I guess, Jake, how important is that bass to you? If you think that Mexican standard is something that you're going to want to continue to upgrade and keep as your core main bass, then yes. You know, I think otherwise I kind of agree with you, JD. It would be not my first thing to do on, you know, a bass if it wasn't my absolute, you know, dream bass.
I mean, sorry, that just made me think of one more thing, and I know we're of course, but I would say that is like, that's a perfectly reasonable bass to upgrade, because like I also had one of the Fender, you know, like the Squire Vintage modified, like the fretless one with a Ebonol, like the plasticky.
I love that fretboard material.
Yeah, it's so great. It was like 300. It was less than 300 new for everything. By the end, that bass had, you know, Hipshot ultralights, had Nordstrand noise canceling, had an Audra active preamps in it, had a Hipshot, had the badass bridge on it. You know, so it's like that. You know, like each of those upgrades are roughly probably about the same cost as the bass initially. So it's like, you know, but it's like the neck on those Squires was so good for what you could get for like a cheap fretless, you know, like it was.
I still say that's the most important part of any, like, you know, if you have a nice neck, you can work around just about everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's changeable.
And I guess you experienced that, Naomi, with the, with the Bronco. Squire Bronco, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. That neck will be staying where it is.
So wait, is that Bronco got the original bridge on it then?
That was what I was going to say, actually. That is definitely the next thing that I would like to change on the Bronco.
Because it's just a two-saddle.
It is, bridge, yeah. It? Yeah, it's fine. It has. I wouldn't say it's caused issue, but I don't doubt that I could get better... better performance out of the bass with a better bridge for sure.
I've got a lot of time for those two saddle bridges. I actually think they're great. Like, I know the whole idea is that you can't, you know, intonate everything right, and, you know, well,
yes,
intonation's for the weak anyway. So
it's a myth. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely important, but it's never correct. Like, it's correct at one fret. You know, like,
yeah. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a total purist. I don't even use tuner pedals, to be honest. I just listen to the skies. But anyway,
the Wilkinson actually do a really good brass saddled two saddle. Bridge.
Nice.
Yeah, replacement. I like Wilkinson a lot too.
Yeah, really good, aren't they? Like, for a really affordable hardware company, everything they do is fantastic. It took me a while to sort of realize that they were really good, because I think they're the sort of brands that appear on a lot of cheaper modeled guitars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or sort of when a cheap range of guitars are trying to do something a bit nicer, it will be Wilkinson Hardware. But yeah, so I almost wrote them off because of that, but they are actually...
Oh, they're solid.
Really good.
Yeah,
they are incredibly good. Now, we are at time. We are at the end of this week's episode of the Bass Guitar Nerds podcast. We did well. We got through a decent wedge of questions.
Can we do 5-minute lightning round?
Let's do it.
Like one quick, just off the top of the head answers. I think some of the other questions we had were about multi effects and stuff like that. So I think we've talked through a lot of those. But let's see.
Yeah, there are some really good questions on here that I would like to hold back, but okay. So let's do. Here we are. I'll run us through a couple of questions for us to answer very quickly. Chris Cuthbertson says, as a self-confessed Wenge addict, how important is the wood used in a bass? Naomi.
I would argue, incredibly important. However, I would say, you know, I have massive admiration, and especially as someone who in my time has worked selling acoustic guitars, I think it's a really lovely thing as your ear becomes trained to the characteristics of different woods, particularly in acoustic instruments, but obviously in our favoured electric bass instruments too. I still remember one of my favorite basses I've ever played was the Okumi P&J's, that Fender did a few years back. That said, the very Bronco that we're talking about is made of one of the cheapest basswoods in modern manufacturing, and I still think it's a beautiful sounding wood. So, yeah, ultimately, I would say I would advise not to be a snob about it, not to overlook the cheaper woods, but absolutely it is inherently characteristic to the instrument.
Yes, absolutely.
100%.
JD Short.
I would also say it's incredibly important, and just in mostly around like density and construction methods, more important for bass than for guitar, electric-wise, I believe. Again, it won't make as much difference as in an acoustic. And you're going to be able to find excellent sounding basses with both high end woods and low end woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very much the case. Although, yes, it's absolutely important, as I think it makes tonal difference. I don't necessarily think there's, you know, I don't necessarily think there's bad wood for a bass. Like I'm sure you can get bad examples of something, but I think that yes, there is definitely tonal differences. Something like Wenge is going to be very heavyweight. It's going to be like a similar sort of tonal thing to Mahogany. So, you know,
deeper, darker,
exactly.
Kind of vibes. Yeah.
Exactly.
Remember, one of the brightest basses I ever played was a Maple Body, that PV Foundation that we spoke about recently.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And that was super unusual. That was like a relatively non-bassy sounding wood.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, there was Squire did a series of vintage modified jazz basses in maple. Do you remember?
Oh, right.
They were the ones that everyone bought for years. They were like £300 and they were maple with a maple neck and black block inlays.
Oh, yeah. Those were maple bodies.
Yeah, they were maple
right,
bodies.
Okay.
And they weighed an absolute ton. The five string, I remember. We had several at GAC returned of the five strings. Like, if we ever sold one, it could come back. If they didn't buy it in store, it could well come back because it was unbelievably heavy and probably the honkiest sounding bass I think we'd ever seen. I don't know how quick fire this was.
Yeah, that wasn't a we attempted it.
Yeah, we tried.
I think we'll work on this and perfect our ideas. We'll go back to rehearsal. We'll work on this in on the training ground.
Yeah,
it's gonna be good. We'll get there, dear listeners.
We will get there eventually, dear listener.
Now, any suggestions open for timer formats?
Oh,
I'm thinking an incredibly slow ascending major scale.
Oh yeah,
as my first suggestion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Also, one more thing. A question. PJ said about 8-string basses. Just because I'm worried they may purchase. Go for the Schecter. There we go.
That's quick fire.
Yeah, I just wanted to
there's a perfect example, JD.
He said he's been looking at the Dean Rhapsody and there's a Schecter Session Riot. So by 8-string, he's talking about like the same as a 12-string guitar.
Yeah.
So the double strings. I always really liked the Hagstrom 8-string that they did.
Yeah, it's super.
I do want to give a shout out though, because Schecter has the Doug Pinnick 12-string now.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty great because they're excellent. And I think Schecter is one of those companies that makes really good value instruments. So
yeah, they also do all the Cure signature models, so they always have a very special place in my heart for that, including that awful acoustic signature model. Have you seen that one?
No, what is it?
The Cure signature model. It's just a Dreadnought acoustic, but it has a massive star on it. It's terrible. It doesn't matter. This is the best guitar nerds. We don't need to talk about acoustics, but it was
we're saying acoustics are terrible. I think that's everyone secretly wanting us to say anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's it for this week's episode of the Bass Guitar Nerds podcast. We will be back the week after next for another episode of the Bass Guitar Nerds podcast. Sorry, I'm trying to stall there because I was trying to open a thing that was telling me what the next episodes are going to be. I still obviously am stalling. Right. Yes. Okay. So yes, we'll be back the week after next with another Bass Guitar Nerds podcast, and then I think week after next is our last regular episode, in fact, for 2020, because then the week after that we're going to be doing the Bass Guitar Nerds Gear of the Year podcast. Ooh. We're all starting to think about what products we're going to be putting through in the bass guitar, bass effects and bass amplifier categories. Of course, a slower year than any other year before, so there's less products to talk about, but still there have been some absolutely cracking bits and bobs. But yes, we'll be back week after next with more of this bass guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.